Marriage of Deceit is the book. This is episode number 6. It's been a little while. The last recording was the 7th, so it's been about 2 weeks. But, Mom, we had to take a bit of a delay due to a small medical issue you were having.
Yes, yes. Part of growing old. Something new happens every day when you're growing old. It's a different day, different story.
Yeah. You're feeling better now?
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling better. Let's one day at a time, I take it and enjoy every day that I can.
Well, that's good. And I'm glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad that we can keep doing the podcast. So let's get into the next chapter, which is the birth. And as you start the chapter, I believe you were about 7 months pregnant. So talk to me about the baby shower that you had.
Oh, the first baby. I had a beautiful baby shower. My mother probably organized it with my sisters. And you might say I got everything I needed to welcome a new baby. It was a surprise. I sort of knew it was coming, but different times you were invited, different places. You wondered, is this the night? Is this the night? And finally it came, and everything went well.
So
very well.
Who organized it for you, and who was there?
My mother, I'm sure, organized, because it was in the basement of one of the homes she bought. And all my cousins, my aunts, Kenny's family, my family. We both had pretty large families, uncles, aunts. Well, not so many uncles. The men usually didn't go to those showers. Now I hear it's different. I don't think there was one man at the baby shower at all. The women that went to those things only. Don't ask me why, but that's the way it was.
How did how did your family and his family get along?
I would say average. They never socialized together unless it was an event of my engagement, a baby shower, talking about the wedding plans. Other than that, they just kept to their own families, and I think his family was more generous money-wise than mine.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And yeah, and they sort of they figured they were very fruitful or tight with their money. There was a feeling there. You knew in conversation.
And so yeah, the baby shower went well. You seemed to have gotten everything you needed, and you really enjoyed that night, from what I recall reading in the book. And then. But on the other side with Ken, it didn't seem to be going that great. You say, most nights he would sneak out and come back very late at night, always stating that he'd had to work late. I didn't believe him, but never wanted to bring it up because I knew it would cause an argument. What do you think he was up to?
I don't know. I in the back of my mind, I'm sure, is he cheating on me? But I couldn't even imagine. I couldn't even imagine a married man cheating on his wife. Don't ask me why. To me, that was like a holy, sacred vow you took. And you just didn't do that. So I wondered, but in the back of my mind, it was there. But I said, you could never accuse, or I used to accuse sometime, but you can never believe it unless you see proof. Proof on a paper or seen something with your own eyes. So I went for the thing that he was working late, and that's what I went with.
But
for years.
You knew in the back of your mind it wasn't true.
I didn't want to believe it.
Right.
I knew there was something wrong. I knew it. A man just doesn't come in and go out 9 times out of 10 and leave his wife alone, especially a pregnant wife.
Yeah.
Which he did all the time. All the time. But he would also say stuff before he left. Get all dressed up in your sexy things, and we'll do stuff when I get home. So when a man tells that to you before he leaves, how can I even suspect that he wants to come home and make love? So that threw me off too a lot.
It was really weird stuff was happening. Like he was, you know, really anxious, and he wanted you to break your water early. Like, I'd never heard of something like that. It's like, you want to put your kid at risk? And so to help your own anxiety? I found that so weird.
He just wanted pregnancies over with. And he thought I was so ugly when I was pregnant. He thought women on the whole were ugly, like the big balloons. Right. I used to have to hide my stomach every time we made love with a blanket. It was weird.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, that's just him and not going to be fat forever, so let it go. I let too many things go for
it's,
too
it's
long.
It's really interesting.
You can't go
what?
Back, Keith.
No, but, you know, at the end of the day, this is not victim blaming here. It's you know, retrospect. And I'm curious how many women, you know, over the years have let things down just trying to kind of keep their marriage together. And
right.
It's really, yeah.
You're right.
So you, according to the doctor, you were going to be due on the 24th. But you did some Christmas shopping. And then the 21st, you noticed, like, some blood. And then you went to the bathroom and then Ken called a cab, right?
You're talking about the birth of Mark, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking to you now, and I don't remember whether we went by cab or we went in his car. That, I can't even remember that part today talking
Do you think, you know, being such a nervous wreck, generally, for him, like, he'd be okay to drive?
You would think, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe
that was part of being a nervous wreck that he couldn't drive. I don't know.
Yeah. So you did mention during the birth that you expect the husband to be supportive and sit there and kind of help you through the breathing and be emotionally supportive for you. But this wasn't the case at all. He said...
No, never.
You were saying
never.
He was like pacing back and forth continuously, asking when I was going to push this baby out because he had to get back to work.
Well, there was a young one, younger than I, in labor when I was in labor with Mark, first one. I was near the end, and because I was moaning, he was asking me to shut up because I was scaring the young girl in labor.
So he was more...
She hadn't even dilated. She wasn't even in... She was just in the cramping stage in the beginning. She wasn't even suffering 1/100 the pain that I was suffering. And he was complaining for me to shut up because I was scaring her, Keith.
Didn't care at all about your suffering... Just cared about looking bad because you were scaring the other person.
And he was even saying to me, I remember, and you want more children after this? You actually want more children? Can you imagine?
Yeah, who does that?
I hadn't even delivered my first, and he was saying to me, and you want to go through this again?
So just zero empathy, just absolute, like, piece of garbage. Do you think it was just his anxiety was flaring up and that's how he dealt with it by being, you know, like just a prick? Or do you think it was like a disdain because he didn't want to have the kids?
I think he didn't want to have the kids, Keith, now that I look back.
Yeah.
I think he would have made it with a woman who probably, or one or two or three. I think he liked multiple women. He was that type. He wasn't born to be a father. There was times when I saw a bit of joy in him when the kids were growing up. When a kid did something really bright or funny, he would laugh or think, be proud. But nothing that I can fantastically say to, oh, this, that here's a real father. No, I didn't find that.
At the same time, just like an incredible, I'd say, month or two of like all this, you know, emotion of finally having your first child, but also the conflicting of dealing with him being such a just a horrible human being towards what was going on. And at the same time, then your niece was in a really bad car accident. I'm curious if you get like what you recall about that time, like what was going through your mind and how your whole family dealt with it.
Oh, she was in a coma for way over a month. She got hit by a car, got thrown up 25 feet in the air on her skull. It was terrible. And Mark was about 6 months old at the time, and I started to go blind because of it. One of my eyes, my nerves actually, they found out caused it. I was going blind in one eye, and they rushed me into the hospital to try and save my sight, and, he was annoyed with this. He was annoyed that I had taken such a feeling, such a reaction, he just was annoyed that he had to get his mother in to mind the baby while he went to work. And something I found strange, his mother told me after when I came home finally from the hospital that every day Mark was all dressed in yellow or all in blue or everything matched and everything. That was not him. I think he had a girl in there overnight looking after the baby. I really do. I really do now that I look back.
Yeah.
Everything was deceitful. How? I picked the right name for my look, everything.
Right. You said she got knocked 25 feet in the air. She had a coma for a month. How did you and your family like deal with it? How was your family coping with it?
Oh, everybody was so sad. I was praying every day. It was unbelievable. Even when I get out of the hospital, I was there for a few weeks. I was going to church, just praying. We didn't deal well with it. Everybody was so sad, and we all figured she was going to die. She pulled through.
Yeah, because you know, from what I get from the book, it's your family. It's not really an emotional family. Like, they're not great communicators.
But at that time, they were. In emergencies, okay. I give my family 100%. The love comes out. It always came out in tragedies. It always did. They were sort of there.
So it
was a very sad time.
So was your mother and father comforting? How did your sister kind of, what was going through her mind?
Oh, it was horrible for her. She was probably bedridden for so long.
Yeah.
Her husband and family had to help take care because Debbie came home, the one that got on the accident. She had to be put in a crib. She had to learn how to talk, walk, and do everything all
so
like a newborn baby when she came. Yeah, and she was 5 years old. She it was like being born again because they had to cut out a good quarter of her brain.
Wow. So, yeah, you had mentioned that, you know, all this overwhelming anxiety, you ended up losing some sight in one of the eyes and you had to get rushed to the hospital. And it would...
Yes.
How many, over several weeks that you had these issues?
Yeah. Every day my sight would go less in that eye. Till it was almost nil when they found out. They would test me for every kind of disease, I think, that they knew on the earth. And I was tested negative on all of them. And the doctor said it was my nerves that did it. My nerves.
Yeah, and I don't think at that time they really knew much about anxiety at all, really?
No. They used to prescribe you Valium. This is what they put me on after for a while, Valium to calm my nerves. But steroids actually brought the sight back, steroids, but not the light, the darkness in that eye is shade different from the other eye. That I'll never get back. That's gone.
Oh, so you're saying...
But the sight I got back.
Okay, so you've had some permanent damage long...
Yes,
I
have.
Yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah, I can cover one eye and then say I see well. I cover the other eye. There's a difference in night and day with them.
Wow. Well, I mean, I'm glad you got your sight back for the most part because, that's must have been very traumatizing.
Yeah, but not the darkness. The darkness didn't match it up. That never came back.
Interesting you had mentioned it because I was going to bring this up too. You know, he was taking care of your son while you were in the hospital. And then when you came back, you were amazed to find that my son dressed all in matching colors. I found this very suspicious because Ken never took the time to match anything, never mind baby clothes. Once again, I didn't question
you see that?
I didn't question my husband because he would only start arguing with me. Now, it just seems like he wouldn't talk to you when you brought it up. He just told you to shut up. And then he said something about Frank hiring him to be an accountant as well.
This was his mistress's years later, I found it, father.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's probably how he met her.
Okay.
Or she met him through her, something. I don't know exactly how they met, but this went on for 9 years, Keith.
And then
it's a long time before I had the proof.
Right. So it was always, you always had these thoughts in the back of your mind. Again, you know, being a good wife, you didn't want to question it, but in the back of your mind, stuff didn't add up.
No, it didn't.
You say by this time,
no.
Then you go on to say, by this time, Ken had made a den for himself in our spare room. I was forbidden to smoke in there. My husband didn't smoke. And he detested people who did. Now, you saying that, it was weird feelings for me Because, you know, obviously, yes. My dad wasn't a lot in my life, but certain things you mentioned in the book, I'm like, oh, wow. Like, people question whether certain things are nature versus nurture. And, you know, me not being connected with my dad at all, really, you know, after being, you know, 3 or 4 years old, he wasn't in my life. But I remember, like, I detested people who smoked.
And I know.
You know, like, I remember you and Bob, my stepdad, you know, you both had smoked like chimneys and just being in the car and the house and just hating it so much. And finding it, like, a couple of things or quirks that you had mentioned that Ken had done, or, you know, he had certain things or he had certain personality traits, and me, like, reflecting and saying, oh, my God, like, I have those same things.
Yeah.
It was really revealing in the book, and you mentioned the smoke.
But that wasn't a bad thing. But at the time, everybody smoked. If you didn't, there was nothing wrong with you.
Right.
You were not sociable.
Yeah, and then you say you purchased a new double bed and placed it in the den. That bed was more comfortable than the one we had in our own bedroom. He said it would be for guests, but I found it odd as we never had anybody over. And then your suspicions were correct. He just started sleeping in the den. Like,
It was for him. Yeah. It was for him, yeah.
So was it that he didn't like the smoke in the room? So he was like, ah, screw this. I'm going to go in a non-smoking room. Or what do you think? It was just like a disdain for you at that point? So he just wanted to sleep alone?
I mean, we would make love, then he'd go back. He'd go to sleep in the other room. We still had sex, but he'd go to bed in the other room. I can't even tell you why. It probably was. It could have been the smoke. Made sense.
Would he constantly bring the smoking up when you were in the house?
No, because he wasn't in the house that much, Keith. He'd come home and eat, change his underwear, and wash his privates and leave.
No.
And I would just be sitting down to join him having supper. He was gone at the door.
It kind of baffles my mind. Like, why do you think he even stayed at that with you at that point?
Well, I think for one thing I could give him credit for is to make sure that the kids were taken care of. Because he did support me. I didn't work. You get it? So the kids ate. Never complained about giving me money to buy them the clothes they needed or the food they needed. That he never complained about. So I can't say 100% he was a bastard. I have to give him credit for that.
But you were baffled why you say, I didn't and couldn't understand why my own husband didn't want me, didn't want our family. This comes up in the book a lot. It's like you can't wrap your head around it. And it took you forever figure that out.
I used to have even some quiet talks with him, not always yelling, say that people do get divorced and we could share our children, whatever. He would just get angry. He would just get angry at that.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to hear the word divorce. Are you kidding me?
And I think that comes up. It says something really, you say something that triggered something in me at the end of this chapter, which kind of explains a lot of his actions. And this was talking about Gwen saying, like, how you're going back to Florida. At the end, you say, he said he couldn't tell Gwen that he was broke. After all, he had his pride. And for me, the pride, I think, has a lot to do with some of these things that don't make a lot of sense. Like the staying with you if he's not happy. What do you think about that?
That could be. I don't know. But there was one time there where he claimed he divorced me privately. I don't know whether you came to that part in the book yet, where he turned around 3 times and said, I divorce you. I divorce you. I divorce you.
Okay.
I think that's the first night he probably went out and cheated on me. Then he never came home that night.
So in his head, he figured he could unilaterally just decide to divorce you, and that's it.
Yeah, but I heard in some foreign countries, that's what they could do. But that's not what we do in Canada, so it wouldn't be legal, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and around the same time, he starts talking weird conversations about a secretary. With his job as an accountant, my husband claimed he would soon be needing a secretary. He said, I didn't have the brains to help him, so that was out of the question. He was hoping to eventually find a good one at one of his jobs and hire her for himself. I was pre-warned that regular lunches with his secretary would be normal and not to get jealous. And then you say, like, who would say something like that? What is he trying to tell me? Like, so he's essentially pre-warning you that he's going to cheat on you and come up with some weird right. story?
In other words, if I ever saw him or anybody ever saw him having lunch with a woman in a restaurant or something, that he would be dating, but they would think or tell me, and I would say, oh, no, 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 it's probably one of his to-be secretaries or something. You see how he was pre-thinking ahead of his excuse if he was ever found with somebody?
It just boggles my mind that he think you would be so, like, naive and stupid to buy that
right.
shit. So, like, what was going through your head when he was saying that?
Exactly what you and I are thinking right now, the same thing. But I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe it. I said, how could a man who marries in front of God, I believe marriage is very sacred, Keith. I still do. How could he even cheat? So I thought maybe it could be just be a bit of flirting. If that, maybe it's just to have dinner with somebody. I always made excuses that until I find proof, you can't really accuse somebody of anything, right?
I suppose, yeah. No, and just, I admire, I suppose, your dedication. And I see some, it's crazy because I see some of these things in my father and I see some of these things from you. That character traits that I've like just you know like loyalty and support being a supporting
I'm full of loyalty full of it
you know obviously to a fault potentially you know but that's why I see the good qualities in you and the kind of like the quirky you know maybe qualities I need to improve in him. And, but just being self-aware of it, you know, it's just, sometimes conflicting emotions for me. So this is where we're going to stop off, for this episode, Mom. I appreciate your time. And just for the people who are listening and want to follow along, of course, marriageofdeceit.com is where you can subscribe to the podcast and also, purchase the book. My sister will, directly either ship you the book or send you an ebook. We don't go through Amazon or any resellers because we take that commission that Amazon takes and we give to help support local shelters. So from my mom, this is Keith saying thank you very much for listening.